The Green Bay Packers are coming off a defining win over the New England Patriots and enter the fourth quarter of the season tied for the best record in the NFL. We'll take one last look back at the Patriots game and ahead to the upcoming Monday night matchup with the Atlanta Falcons with Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com on Cheesehead TV's Railbird Central next. Railbird Central at Cheesehead TV. I'm your host, Brian Caribou. Joined by our live blog director, Jamie Snowden, along with Alex Talich. We're talking some Packers football. We're talking about a win this past Sunday over the New England Patriots. Big time win. Talk about that game and look forward to the next. We have Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us as he does every Wednesday. Nathan, how you doing?
I'm doing well. How about you?
Very good. Glad you could join us as always. Nathan, let's start with Davante Adams, who, of course, had a great game outside of that big drop in the win over the Patriots. With so many great rookie wide receivers in the NFL, what I want to know is, how is Davante Adams stacking up to the rest of them?
Yeah, as you said, he had a great game this past Sunday, but when you compare him to the rest of the wide receiver class, he doesn't stack up quite as well. This rookie class has been really impressive this year. In 2012 and 2013, there was just one wide receiver with significant snaps and a positive grade from our site, and that's Keenan Allen. And compare that to this year, and there's seven wide receivers with significant snaps and a positive grade. And Adams isn't among those. The main reason is mostly the lack of targets that he's received, since if you're not getting targeted, that will slightly hurt your grade over time. So that's why Adams hasn't stacked up. Even if you look at basic statistics, there are 11 rookie wide receivers with 500 receiving yards, and Adams isn't among them. But still, it was a really good game out of Adams this past week.
You got to think that maybe he'll join that group with, there's still a quarter of the season left, so there's still time for him, and he's only becoming more involved with the offense. Nathan, on Sunday, it was a matchup of two elite quarterbacks. The Packers come out on top. What gave Aaron Rodgers the edge over Tom Brady?
Yeah, it was a good game between both of the quarterbacks there, but there were two things that were noticeably different between the two quarterbacks that gave Rodgers the edge in this game. First was the pass protection. Both quarterbacks had an NFL passer rating above 125 when they were not under pressure, and both quarterbacks had an NFL passer rating under 50 when they were under pressure. The difference being that Brady was under pressure on 33% of his dropbacks, while Rodgers was only under pressure on 21%. The other difference was Rodgers was much better on deep passes or passes that were in the air for 20 yards or more. On those kind of passes, Rodgers completed 5 of 8 passes for 171 yards and a touchdown, which, of course, is really good for those kind of passes, while Brady only completed 1 of 5 passes for 23 yards that were in the air for 20 yards or more.
I'm curious, is that 20 yards from the line of scrimmage or from where they are in the pocket?
From the line of scrimmage, so plus however far back their dropback went.
Gotcha. So just curious about that. You mentioned the pass protection for the Packers. It seems like it's been this way for a couple weeks, but the Packers' offensive line appears to have had a hell of a performance. Who led the way, and has Pro Football Focus ever considered a way to rank the performance of an entire offensive line?
We do look at the entire offensive line a little bit. We have a signature stats section, and in there you can look at just offensive line, and in there you can see their pass blocking efficiency. There's the right word. for the entire offensive line, which the Packers' offensive line is faring really well in that category. And in this game in particular, TJ Lang stood out amongst the group. He and Sidden both were perfect in pass protection in this game. In the run game, Lang did a couple of nice things, typically blocking defensive players to the outside. But he was able to do it both on the line of scrimmage, going down to the second level, as well as ball blocking. So he did a great job in this one, made our team of the week, and has made a case for him being the best right guard in the NFC this year.
Very interesting. I'm going to have to go check out that offensive line efficiency ranking. I have not seen that, so I want to go check that out. We're talking to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com here at Cheesehead TV's Railroad Central on a Wednesday morning. Nathan, the Packers went out on a limb and replaced A.J. Hawk in the starting lineup with Sam Barrington. How would you assess Barrington's game?
He had an all-right game, but not a great game. There were a couple of things that he did well, including a couple of nice tackles in the run game. He had a quarterback hit when he was blitzing. And in the pass game, he only allowed a 7-yard catch, and that was on a 2nd-and-20 play. So typically, defenders will give a little bit more cushion when it's 20 yards to go for a first down. So in terms of the pass game and a little bit the run game, he was fine. There were a lot of times where an offensive lineman was able to get to the second level or a fullback and was able to either seal Barrington away from the run or push him away from the runner. So there were a couple plays where the offense was successfully able to block him. And then he also had a missed tackle in the run game, and that doesn't help as well.
Yeah, I think on the whole, though, that you could say it's a good job for, or perhaps an upgrade over replacing A.J. Hawk. Hopefully he only gets better. Defensive lineman Mike Daniels, I know, graded out as the highest player on the Packers defensive line by Pro Football Focus. What led to his grade?
He had a great job specifically pass rushing against their left guard, Dan Connolly, most of the time. Over the game, he had a sack, 3 hits and 2 hurries on 34 pass rushes. And what helped his grade, not just the quantity of the pressure, but the quality as well. There were a number of times where he was either double teamed by a guard as well as the center, as well as plays where he was able to disrupt the play really quickly before Brady had much time to make any sort of decision. In the run game, he had a few good plays, a few bad plays, which basically evened out there. And then his grade was hurt a little bit by the neutral zone infraction. But really, his pass rushing was very good in this game. And I know I don't think I've talked about Daniels too much over this season so far. But he's ranked as our 7th highest graded 3-4 defensive end so far this year. So he's been having an excellent season again.
Yeah, it's nice to see him recognized for the good play that he has, and amazing to think what grade he could have had he not just, you know, done silly things like have that neutral zone infraction. On the flip side of the coin, Morgan Burnett graded O as the lowest player on the Packers defense by Pro Football Focus. What led to his grade, Nathan?
He had his best game the week before and then followed that up by his worst, and his big problem was basically Rob Gronkowski. Burnett allowed 3 catches this game, and all of them were to Gronkowski. They went for 59 yards total, which is the most yards he's allowed all year. Our grades aren't too kind for those who missed tackles, and he missed 2 of them in this game. On the bright side, he did have a nice stop in the run game, as well as non-block pressure, so that helped make up for it a little, helped make up for the poor plays he allowed a little bit, but still, of the big plays, each of them ended up hurting the team.
Yeah, I remember that play where Gronkowski broke like 3 tackles, and Morgan Burnett being one of them. That play didn't look good for the Packers. But looking ahead here, Nathan, give us the scoop on the Atlanta Falcons. This team just beat the Arizona Cardinals, who had the best record in the NFC coming into last week. Tell us about the Falcons.
Sure, they have Matt Ryan. He's been quietly having a very good season this year. The only problem for them is he hasn't had a ton of help around them, especially on the offensive line. They've allowed 147 pressures this year, Compare that to the Packers, who have only allowed 80 pressures from their offensive line. So a significant difference there. They have Julio Jones, who's been having a decent season this year for his standards, 1,169 receiving yards. And he's also made guys miss after he's made the catches, 12 players missing tackles on him so far this year. So he's going to be the main man the Packers are going to want to stop in this one. With the Falcons on defense, they are decent at stopping the run, although they have a few players who are especially good at that. And I'm not sure how much they'll be on the field with the Packers if they stay in their three wide receiver set for most of the game. So that might help cancel out the Falcons' ability to stop the run. They have a few decent pass rushers, but no one who is great at it and not much depth at it. So I'm not guessing Rodgers will be able to have a clean pocket for the most part in this game. They have Desmond Trufant, who is a very good cornerback, probably not talked about enough. But I wouldn't be surprised if he lines up across Jordy Nelson all game. So then we could see Randall Cobb and Adams getting a lot of chances in this one, and I'm guessing both those wide receivers could have good games. So certainly possible for the Falcons to stay in this game and make it competitive if a lot of things go right, if Matt Ryan and Julio Jones are on fire, for example. But a lot of things would need to go right for them and wrong for the Packers in order for the Packers to lose this one.
Looking forward to it. Nathan, before you go, I want to give you a chance, as we do occasionally here at Railbird Central, to plug Pro Football Focus. And this being the holiday season, perhaps it's an opportunity for our listeners to perhaps give the gift of Pro Football Focus. Can you tell us about the website and what a subscription involves?
Yeah, so Pro Football Focus, I'm hoping plenty of you know by now, but we grade every player on every play, as well as keep track of who every player on every play is, what they do, and where they line up. This gives us a much better idea of how players are playing rather than just the box score statistics. It gives us numbers on offensive linemen and lets us know how well they're playing, defensive players as well, not just their sacks and interceptions, but how many times they're thrown at, how many catches they allow, how many yards they allow, and so on. So it's for free to see a lot of the articles we have on the website. So if you just go to www.profootballfocus.com, you can read all of that for free. In order to get all of the data that I just talked about, we have a premium section, which costs $27 for a calendar year. So if you were to sign up today, you would get it until December 3rd, 2015. And that has not just information for this season, which get updated within 24 hours of each NFL game, but also for the past few years. So it goes back to 2007. So if you want to see how a player's been doing over these past few years, you're able to do that with a premium section as well. So if you don't have it, it's a great tool for you to get to know about both the Packers as well as the teams that they play. And if you know someone who loves football, definitely a great holiday gift for them as well.
Thanks, Nathan. Appreciate it as always. We'll talk to you next week to discuss this game against the Falcons.
Sounds good. Have a good one.
All right. Take care. Once again, Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com joining us as he does every Wednesday here at Cheesehead TV. Now it's time for
Packers News of the Day.
Yesterday was quarterback Aaron Rodgers' birthday, so happy belated birthday to Aaron Rodgers. Not much has happened since the win over the New England Patriots. I'm sure everybody's still glowing from that big win that kind of cemented the Packers as perhaps the team to beat in the entire NFL, and what a win that was. Hasn't been any transaction since then. Packers have actually an extra day off this week. So there's kind of been little, you know, happening in the world of the Green Bay Packers outside, you know, the typical appearances in the media and things like that, player talk shows. Aaron Rodgers, of course, hosted his own talk show, as he does, you know, every Tuesday. Talked about, you know, how he wasn't willing to maybe cement this team as the Packers' best team yet. at least in his tenure, kind of waiting on that yet. And I suppose that's a smart thing, you know, as seeing as they won Super Bowl XLV, maybe he wants to see if they can duplicate that that success this year. Without a lot, you know, happening in terms of transactions, one thing, you know, I kind of want to spend the bulk of the rest of this episode talking about is kind of directing you to an article we published here at Cheesehead TV yesterday. I, in particular, published, and I don't do this to, you know, like, pump myself up, but there's points in the article I want to talk about, and that is the blog post, 9 months to transform the Green Bay Packers defense. And what I did was kind of went in chronological order and looked at the decisions the Packers have made, either decisions by the front office or decisions by the coaching staff to change up this Packers defense from a year ago. And, you know, if you already read the article, I kind of want to take this time to maybe cover a little bit new territory or discuss things in depth that maybe weren't, you know, totally discussed in the article. I think it's interesting how much the Packers defense has improved from last year when they were probably one of the worst units in the NFL. And when you compare it to the offense, which we know has been very good for years, it was the relative weak link in Green Bay. And you know, the Packers had to do something about it. And, you know, it's been a slow transformation. Nothing has happened overnight. But I think from where, you know, the 2013 season ended to where they are right now, as of the win over the New England Patriots, a ton of progress has been made. And I'm not saying the Packers are the best defense in the NFL. They might not be in the top five. They might not even be in the top 10. But I think you could start making the argument that they're in the top 10. And as I point out in the article, you know, some of the statistics don't really, you know, some of the most heavily cited statistics in the NFL don't really support that. You know, when you look at total defense, which is, you know, yards per game given up, they're like 24th in the league. In terms of scoring defense, I think they're 24th in the league. You know, how many, the average points per game they allow. But when you look at more telling statistics that more sharply influence the outcome of a game, things like creating turnovers. Packers, I believe, fourth in the NFL in turnovers forced. Opponent passer rating. Packers, seventh in the NFL in the quarterbacks they face, which is rather remarkable when you face teams like New England and Tom Brady, and how well they can do against him and able to limit his effectiveness. So I think the Packers defense has come a long way. And the one thing, the kind of new territory I want to, you know, address here, and that I think is really notable, is, you know, I think Dom Capers has gotten a lot of criticism over the years, and of course, not so much in the Super Bowl year in 2010. But since then, you know, it kind of seems like as if, you know, from 2011 to 2013, the Packers defense had gotten progressively worse each, you know, almost with each year. And it was the job by Dom Capers this season. Not that he's fully to credit, but I think Dom Capers has done such a terrific job and be willing to be flexible and adapt his defense to the strength of his players rather than the other way around, fitting, you know, round pegs and square holes. And I just take a look at the things that Dom Capers has been willing to experiment with this season. Remember the first few weeks of the season when there was all this talk about the Packers and this 4-3 defense they were doing? They actually had a 4-3 defense, and you know what? It's kind of gone away. It's kind of gone away. I'm not sitting here like Pro Football Focus and charting every single play. And I mean, if it perhaps slipped in for a play, I may have missed it, but I mean, By and large, you know, the Packers 4-3 defensive front has not been seen in weeks. I like the fact that the Packers were willing to try it. I like the fact that it had success at moments. I like the fact that it's in their back pocket and they could bust it out at any moment as kind of a surprise, perhaps. But, you know, it seems like the Packers had gone away from that because they've found other things that have worked. There was also the time there when the NASCAR package was all the rage. The win over the Carolina Panthers in particular, the next day that was in like the headlines of every newspaper in the state of Wisconsin. Ooh, the NASCAR package. Packers getting all their fast pass rushers on the field at the same time. What they were doing was getting all their elephant types on the field. You know, Julius Peppers, Nick Perry, Mike Neal, Clay Matthews. That was the four-man defensive front all rushing the passer. And you know what? That's by and large gone away, and yeah, it's been seen from time to time, but in recent weeks, that really hasn't so much been the case anymore. But you know, I think it's great that the Packers were willing to experiment, and again, I think it's great that it's in their back pocket and they could unveil that at any time, and you know, just get their fast pass rushers out there, and then Micah Hyde at safety. Something that, you know, I think it's a long off season from January through July. And that was a major talking point the entirety of we spent months talking about Micah Hyde shifting to safety. And you know, especially before they drafted Ha-Ha Clinton Dix, you know, Micah Hyde was like the man there. And, the Packers draft Clinton Dix, and, you know, about a month into the season, they make Clinton Dix a full-time player and starter in their defense. And Micah Hyde has since kind of gone back to his slot cornerback role. And I think all these things showed that, hey, Dom Capers was willing to try things. He was willing to experiment. And I think people thought, you know, prior to this year, that was a weakness of Dom Capers, his inflexibility, his rigidity to stick with that 3-4 system when maybe his players didn't necessarily fit those roles per se. But, you know, he's been willing to try things, and I think they've found what has worked. And so kudos to Dom Capers more than anything. I think that's the theme of this show is kudos to Dom Capers for finding things that work. And it's been such a transition and trying different things this year. And that is just a few examples. But by all means, go to the article and read the whole list of things the Packers have done this year, including moves by general manager Ted Thompson in the front office and, you know, guys he decided to part ways with from last season, you know, guys like MD Jennings, Jarrell Worthy, Johnny Jolly, Ryan Pickett, and guys they've signed from Julius Peppers, LaTroy Guyon. It's been interesting what the Packers have been able to do. Going back to the defense here in Dom Capers, I think he's found other things that have worked, and especially since the bye week. And two of those major things have been the change at outside linebacker. Now consider, week one, you're starting inside linebackers, A.J. Hawk and Brad Jones. How much has changed since week one? We are now entering week 14 here. The starting inside linebackers now are Clay Matthews and Sam Barrington. Who could have seen that coming in training camp? And, it, you know, I think maybe a lot of people may have argued that that should have been the lineup all along. But, you know, I got to give credit to the Packers a lot. It's not easy to take a guy like A.J. Hawk out of the starting lineup. Here is the longest tenured player on the Packers defense. You know, he's been with them a long time now. And I don't think the Packers have willingly kept him out of the starting lineup since the first game of the 2010 season. I remember that week one of the 2010 season, I think the Packers willingly benched A.J. Hawk. Remember, they had Desmond Bishop at the time. They had Brandon Chillar at the time. They had Nick Barnett at the time. It was a little bit different Packers defense back then. The first game of the Super Bowl year. And then A.J. Hawk gets back in the good graces and has been a starter every game since that time, except for injury. And I think there were two games in the 2011 season that he missed due to injury and has not been out ever since. So, out of the starting lineup we're talking about. So the Packers, went out. It took a lot for them for such a respected guy, a long tenured guy, the leader of the defense, kind of the communicator, the guy who relays all the plays, gets the defensive line lined up out there. And you saw you saw this past Sunday against New England, Sam Barrington has a way to go to become comfortable in this defense. He didn't know at times when he was who he was covering because you saw other players had to point him out. He actually had to go guard the perimeter of the field out there. And it was, you could tell Sam Barrington didn't know where to line up or what exactly his responsibility was. So hopefully, I mean, with every passing week, he's going to become more comfortable. And hopefully, A.J. Hawk is out there helping him out through that in practice throughout the week. It's too bad you don't get to see these kind of things. You always hear about A.J. Hawk being a stand-up guy. I certainly know he is in all his public appearances in the media and all that. Certainly hope he's willing to help his teammates. Guys trying to take his job when it comes to practice as well, because Sam Barrington needs some help. But I think Sam Barrington did such a good job against the Patriots. Was he perfect? No. But, I think he's an upgrade over A.J. Hawk. He's a thumper. I really thought there were times where he looked like Desmond Bishop out there. I think, Clay Matthews and Sam Barrington kind of complement each other very well when they're the inside linebackers together, because I think Barrington is the thumper, and I think Clay Matthews is the guy who can play with some speed and make things happen with a little bit of quickness out there. So I think it's remarkable what the Packers have done at the inside linebacker position and the changes they've made and the things they've been able to do and the success they've been having and all the things that have opened up. Like when the Packers switched Clay Matthews to the inside, it allowed them to get Nick Perry playing outside linebacker more often, more snaps. And yeah, these past 2 weeks, Nick Perry has kind of been limited by an injury a little bit. But I think, that by and large, if Nick Perry ends up missing one game the whole year, and credit him, he came back in 2 weeks after this shoulder injury although he didn't play a ton against the Patriots, he toughed it out and played. And hopefully he's only going to get back healthier and back to the level he was before that injury. I know there's commenters out there on the blog or sick of Nick Perry and his injuries, but I mean, my goodness, this is the NFL. If he misses one game this year, consider yourself lucky. I consider it a blessing if Aaron Rodgers would miss only one game a season. And knock on wood, that hasn't happened yet, and hopefully it doesn't happen. Hopefully the game he does miss is week 17 when the Packers have wrapped up home field advantage and he doesn't have to play. Hopefully that'll be the game Aaron Rodgers misses. So anyway, those were some points I wanted to point out here. The transformation of the Packers defense, I think they're headed in the right direction. And I think they're doing a good job in some of the most important aspects of the game. And the Packers defense doesn't have a bad red zone defense as well. That's pretty good. So good job by all parties involved, from the front office to the coaches to the players, for marked improvement from last season. But now it's time for
the day ahead
in the world of the Green Bay Packers on Wednesday. Today, the Packers have the day off, an atypical day off on a Wednesday due to the upcoming Monday Night Football game, where the, you know, the typical, you know, Sunday to Sunday schedule has kind of changed things up a little bit. And head coach Mike McCarthy on Monday, during his regular Monday press conference, talked about the schedule, kind of gave his rationale why the players are getting the day off. And I wanted to share that so people could hear, you know, when the injury report comes out today, or, you know, it normally would on a Wednesday, but it's not. And so anybody who's wondering, where's the injury report? That always comes out on Wednesday. Well, here's kind of the reason why it's not going to happen.
Well, we're going to treat Thursday like a Wednesday, so and so we've just kind of moved towards that way. I wanted the players to have an extra day off this week. You know, you look at years past when you plan out your schedule. You know, we've played on Thanksgiving Day pretty much every other year. I always like that little break right before the fourth quarter season, so tried to create that a little bit here with the Monday night schedule.
So, yeah, the Packers getting an extra day off, and I think that was notable by McCarthy when he mentioned, you know, every other week they basically play on Thanksgiving, and you kind of, you know, when you have those Thursday night football teams, it's like a mini bye afterwards where you get a little bit of extra time off, and granted, the Packers aren't getting, you know, an entire weekend off here. But at least they get an extra day to rest and recuperate. This may be some of the most rest they get until the end of the season. It certainly would be nice if they can, you know, clinch home field advantage entering week 17, and you know, that game doesn't matter, but certainly that's no guarantee right now. They may have to, you know, scratch and claw their way through if they want to get those playoff games at Lambeau Field, and we all know how important that is. So, we'll see how the rest of the season shakes out. But that'll do it for today's episode of Railbird Central. Thank you, everybody, so much for joining us. Thank you to Nathan Yonke of ProFootballFocus.com for joining us on the show, as he does every Wednesday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. Not just Nathan, but every Monday, Wednesday, Friday at 8:30 a.m. Central Time. This upcoming Friday, our next episode, we'll have Scott McKenna of the Talkin' Smack blog join us, as he does. He's our monthly engagement, the first Friday of every month. So excited to welcome him onto the show on Friday. We'll see you then, folks. On behalf of Jamie Snowden, Alex Talich, I'm Brian Caribou, on behalf of everybody here at Cheesehead TV. We'll see you later. I leave you today with a song called In the Kitchen by Humphreys McGee on Cy Fidelity Records. See you later, everyone. Go Pack, go.
It was cold in the kitchen and the lights were low as winter.